It's time for another episode of Getting to Know You for March 2023. Our guest this month is Terry Borden from New York. Here is our host for the evening, Susie B.
Welcome, everyone, to tonight's edition of Getting to Know You. And tonight, I have the pleasure of interviewing, I guess, the one and only Terry Borden, or as my iPhone calls it, Bordenary. So welcome, Bordenary.
Why, thank you, Miss Susie. Good to be here, I think. We'll let you know later.
We're going to start off with our basic questions. Where were you born?
Well, I was born in Corning, New York, home of the Corning Glass Center. Back in the early part of 1950, then.
And is this where you grew up?
Well, yeah, sort of. Actually, grew up between here and school, but that's where my home was, yeah.
Do you have brothers and sisters? And if so, do they have the same vision problem as you?
No, I have three brothers. Actually, two of them are half-brothers. My mother was married before my dad. They didn't have any vision problems, and my other brother that was born to the same dad as I, he has no vision problems. So no other than myself.
What's the cause of your vision problem?
Well, I was born with detached retina, and that made me blind in one eye and partially in the other eye, had partial sight, up until I was 11 years old, and then I got glaucoma. And I also had I ran into a door casing in gym class, and I had a slight concussion, and they sort of think that might have been part of my total blindness. They said it possibly could have finished detaching the retina, so. Combination between that and the glaucoma.
So you lost the rest of your vision when you were 11?
That is correct.
Okay. Now, where did you go to school?
I went to the New York State School for the Blind in Batavia, which is about 100 miles from Corning. And when I first started there, we were only allowed to come home one week in a month. And it was kind of tough at first, but we got used to it. Usually rode the train back and forth back when we had a passenger train through here, but we don't anymore. But yeah, it was kind of hard at that time to leave home. But actually, I was 6 years old when I started school because I had eye surgery at five, and they kind of made me start a year later. So I was kind of surprised the school did let me start out in first grade rather than kindergarten.
Your legs were too long for the desk. Okay, you stayed at school and it was tough. At what point did it become enjoyable to be with your buds and do things?
Oh, I think after 6 months or so, it got easier. And then once I got to come home a little more often, it helped a lot. So, but eventually when I got older, I came home every weekend. I had a lot of friends at home that I enjoyed being with, and so I tried to make a home as much as possible. But I did enjoy school, too. At the time, I always said I didn't like it, but when I got out, I realized how much I really missed it and how much good it really did for me.
Okay, outside of the classroom, all the stuff that you had to take, what were some things that you did extra besides the arithmetic, reading, and all of that stuff? Were you involved in sports, in shop, music? What kind of activities were you involved in?
I really enjoyed shop. I took wood shop and metal shop and made a lot of different projects. And I enjoyed track and wrestling, but I didn't stick with it, which was kind of my fault because when I become a teenager, I wanted to go home and be with the teenagers at home and do stuff with them. So I kind of didn't really stick with the track and the wrestling very long. But I guess it was back when, you first get to experience the girls and you want to date and all that, you know. So, and it was kind of course, the teenagers was my fun years.
Well, when I ask, what did you enjoy doing or what kind of things were you involved in? I started to say flirting. I guess I should have just added that in because you've already answered that. In terms of learning Braille, I guess you learned Braille in first grade. And mobility, at what point did they start mobility training?
Yeah, actually, I started learning Braille in first grade. Used the old board, pegboard, to learn my alphabet with. And I kind of got better at that, and I can't remember the second question. You know how good my memory is.
Mobility training.
Right, okay. I'll just test them to see if you know. But, yeah, started mobility about the sixth grade. Although around campus and going to town, we hardly ever used a cane, which I was really surprised. Actually, not too many of the students did, but we were taught, we called it cane travel, and how to, use the different techniques and so on.
Hey, can you remember in school maybe any competition that you were involved in other than for a special girl or trips that you may have taken that kind of stands out?
Well, not really too much. One thing I did leave out, I did take a life-saving class. We had a built-in heated swimming pool just off our gymnasium, and they taught life-saving, and I took that class. That was quite interesting. And later on in life, I was able to save a friend from drowning using my life-saving techniques, which I was pretty happy over that. But let's see. About the only trips we made were more or less in Rochester, New York. They had a circus come there, and we went to, things like that. And they had an amusement park they took us to every once a year, I think, for all the students. Other than that, not a whole lot. And, of course, if I would have stayed in wrestling and track, I would have went to, different track meets and so on. But I didn't.
Okay. When you were in school, did you have an idea of what you wanted to do when you got out? What was that? And what did you actually do when you graduated?
I liked working with wood and building things. Like I said before, I took metal shop, but I did like working with wood. I wanted to really get into something with that, but I didn't. Then after my school life, I went on to went to an evaluation in Syracuse, New York. They put me through different job techniques and see what I would like. So I went through that, and I kind of wanted to get into a darkroom technician, but I never was successful at it. Then I came back home, and I worked in a sheltered workshop for 3 years in Elmira, New York. Back in those days, they didn't pay much, and I think I earned about 30 cents an hour weaving rugs and placemats.
What was your first, after the workshop, what was your first job?
Well, after that, I got married when I was working at the workshop, and then my daughter was born, and then my wife had a aunt out in Jacksonville, Florida, and she thought we should come out there, thought I might find work there, but that never worked out well either. But then we lived there only 6 months in Florida and moved to Battle Creek, Michigan.
When did you start working at Corning, and how long did you work there?
Well, I never actually worked at Corning. You mean I worked for the Corn and Glass, but I worked for Watkins Glen International Raceway after I came back from Michigan. I'm kind of hopping all over here. let me go back to Michigan, and I went through a job evaluation in Michigan as well, and at Kalamazoo, Michigan, and I was going to do the, I was interested in becoming a machine operator, and I was going to be the first machine operator in the state of Michigan because they thought I'd do well at it. They also thought I'd make a good chef, but about that time, my wife and I split up, and I ended up moving back here to New York State. After that, I remarried again, and I started a radio shop where I sold CB radios and other type of business radios. And I did that for a few years. And then after that, my second wife and I split up. I went to work at Watkins Glen International Racetrack as a dispatcher for the security and the sheriff's department. When they'd get a call on the track where there's problems, I would report it to the sheriff's department and they would get help. But, so I'm sorry, I'm kind of bouncing all over here.
Well, we are doing this cold, so I think you're doing fine. All right, so the last job, I guess, that you had was at the racetrack?
No, actually, I only did that when there was a major NASCAR race in the area. And then I married Nancy, and we had a communication shop where her and I both worked on radios. We used to put extra channels in CB radios, and we also sold and repaired commercial radios for businesses. She would do a lot of the soldering. I would do a lot of the tuning of the radios, and we were doing that for about 4 years. And then it kind of got to be a hassle where your time wasn't really your own because people were coming to your home and bringing equipment and wanting you to repair them. They call you all hours. So then I went to work in Elmira, New York, remanufacturing toner cartridges for commercial copying machines and printers. We would have to, they would get in all these old cartridges, and we would have to take them in. We called it the dirty room, use an air compressor and blow the old toner out of them, and we'd run, and then we'd have to use a heat gun and remove the labels, old labels off the cartridges, and then we'd take this chemical and rub on to get the stickiness off and get them all cleaned up. Then we'd have them refilled, and then we would assemble them and then package them for sale. So that was kind of what I did at the toner company.
Any other jobs after that?
No, I did that until I retired in 2013. So I've been a bum ever since.
Let's back up a minute. Can you think of any major hurdle that occurred before you were 25? What you consider a major hurdle?
No, not really. I did forget to mention that I do have children. I've got a son and a daughter out in Michigan, and I've got a son here in New York by my second wife. And Nancy and I, all we had was kitty cats. And we've been together for 41 years, so. But I'm trying to think of some other things. I've done some foolish things, of course, but, you know, they were fun things. They were in teenage years, but I bought my first car after I got my first job at the Shelter Workshop, and I used to go out and dry that on the back roads with friends telling me where to go. Of course, everybody told me where to go, but it was a standard shift. I used to like to get out and drive it and speed shift it. And used to have a lot of fun. Of course, we were bad. We were drinking and driving and all kinds of stuff back in those days.
Drinking and driving, and driving as a blind man with no driver's license. Well, that seems very harmless. Did at any point in your life, did you really try to hide the fact that you were blind?
Well, yes, sort of, I guess. When my brothers and I had walked down the street, a lot of times I didn't like to use the elbow or hang on to the shoulder method. I hardly ever used a cane. So what we'd do is I'd just kind of bump up his arm once in a while and act like I could see. So, I figured, because I was looking for women too. So I guess I didn't want to do the blind thing. I thought it might turn them away. So I don't know if anybody else ever did that, but I did.
I think most of us have. I think a lot of us have. So I'm glad you're honest about that, because if you'd said no, I would have probably thought, Okay, hobbies. I know you have hobbies, and one of them requires a tower.
Okay, one of the hobbies I had was in CB radio until that got kind of trashy, and I didn't like that anymore, so I got into ham radio, and otherwise known as amateur radio, and I got my first license in 1985, and I upgraded to amateur extra, I'm in advanced, not extra. I didn't quite make it, almost did, but anyway, I do own two ham radio repeaters. They're just east of Corning, up and there's on a 200-foot tower is where the antennas are. And the little building at the bottom of the tower houses my repeater stations. So I take care of those. And I was the president of the Corning Amateur Radio Association for several years. And let's see, what else? I guess that's all I can think of as far as that goes. But I used to work on my antenna and scare my neighbors. I had a 50-foot tower at the end of my house. I used to climb up that, and I didn't use any safety straps or harnesses. I just climbed up it and put antennas up it. And everybody in the neighborhood would be holding their breath waiting for me to fall, I think. But I didn't.
Can you think of anything, something that happened that was, it was funny or embarrassing, or just a special remembrance? And then I've got a follow-up for that.
Well, one of the things I did was I was shoveling my, I'm pretty sure a few of you have heard this story, but I was shoveling my driveway, and sometimes you know how you can sense a wall getting closer to you. I thought I was almost to my garage, and come to find out, I was close to my neighbor's house and right outside the lady's window. And I heard about that for a long time. Peeping Terry, a blind Peeping Terry. She used to pick on me all the time about that.
Recently, you went out to breakfast, which you enjoy doing with some of your buddies. You went out to breakfast and you and one of the guys went out at a different time than the other two or three. And you want to tell us about that?
Oh, yeah. There was four of us went out to breakfast. After breakfast, we went around the corner to a bakery. So we're in there. We made our purchases. And there was George and John and Kevin and myself. So Kevin said, well, Terry and I are going to go out and get in the car and wait for you guys. And so George said, yeah, go ahead. The car's unlocked. So we go out. We go get in the car. When I was on the way out to the car, I thought, man, we went a lot further to the car than we did when we went into the place. But I didn't say anything. So we get in the car. Kevin gets in the front seat, and I get in the back seat. He's sitting there munching on his baked good that he got at the bakery, and I sit in the back seat. And he looks over, and he sees John and George coming out of the bakery, and they go get in the car. About that time, Kevin realized, man, we're in the wrong car. So at about that time, there was a lady came up to the driver's side of that car, put her hand on the door handle. She jumps back, throws her hands up in the air like somebody like she got struck by lightning or something, or electrocuted. And so Kevin and I jump out of the car, and Kevin says, sorry, ma'am, we thought it was our car. Of course, George and John were across the street laughing their butt off at us. But that was, we heard about that for a while.
And the guy you were with, he has no vision problems, right?
That's right. But I told him next time I'm going to lead him.
Okay. Well, I know after retirement, you have not been idle. Here on VIP, you're always busy helping somebody with their computers and those long, long board meetings that you all reportedly have. You want to mention anything about your after-retirement activities?
Yeah, after I retired, Nancy and I moved from where we lived in Beaver Dams, New York, to Painted Post, which is just at the edge of Corning. Then I really, of course, I was wrapped up in VIP before that, even when I was working. But then after I retired, I got more involved and got into working on computers and helping people with tech support. I enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. And, of course, there's other things that we do behind the scenes, you know, put up things and send Parker recipes to put in the cookbook and do searching for different stuff of interest that we put in items of interest. And usually if somebody's looking for something, they mention it, I'm off looking for it for them. I love research.
I know that the book club from another site appreciates the fact that you find a lot of the books that we usually read books that are on board, but we have people in the book club that are from Canada and other countries that don't have access to Bard. And I really appreciate the fact that I can mention a book to you and very, very often you can find it MP3. So we really appreciate that. Do you have anything that you would like to add before I let folks ask you questions? Because they have been waiting and waiting to do this.
Yeah, I have a feeling I'm going to be in trouble. I don't know. Are you sure you want to open up the room? But no, I really can't think of anything else. I know there's things that I've missed. I know Parker's going to say, well, why don't you tell about the time that you mopped the floor with cream of wheat? Which when I was married to my first wife out in Michigan, I thought I'd be a nice guy and mop the floor. But she kept the spick and span underneath the kitchen sink. I never thought that she kept cereal under there, but I put the warm water in the bucket and I dumped this, what I thought was spick and span, in there, and come to find out it was cream of wheat. So I mopped the floor with cream of wheat. Thank goodness it wasn't cooked because it settled to the bottom, but it's good for fun anyway.
Okay, gang, here's your chance to ask questions. Just remember, if you are keyed up to ask a question and someone gets the key before you, please let go of the key so Terry can answer the question, because I think we'll have plenty of time for everyone to get their chance. So now, the floor is open.
Terry, good interview, and I know you didn't tell a lot of stuff, and it's probably a good thing, because we don't want you to get arrested. But I think there was a time that you had a guide dog. How long did you actually have a guide dog?
I got him in 92, I'm sorry. And I worked him for about 9 to 10 years. Then when I started working, it was a dirty place and I didn't want him to, you know, so I kind of got a little lazy taking him out working him, and then he started getting crippled in his hindquarters. So I had him until 2005. I didn't really want to go get another one, because every time I went someplace, I was usually with somebody. So I didn't want to, you know, take chances away from somebody else getting one. So then we had to end up putting him down in 2005. He got so crippled that it was, you know, just didn't want to put him through it any longer.
Professor, I know that you had a real significant health scare at one point in time. You want to tell us about that?
Well, the last one I had was doing a stress test. Of course, they tried to get your heart rate up, and so they got it up pretty good, I guess. And I was to the point where I told them, I can't do any more. And about that time, I dropped. And the old ticker stopped, and they had to put the paddles on me. So they got me to the hospital and put a pacemaker and defibrillator in me. And so I'm part bionic, but I'm still kicking around, making people miserable as much as I can.
Well, Terry, you want to tell us about how much you like shrimp, and particularly how it affects you when you eat sometimes a little bit, but too much, and have gout. You know, tell us about that event.
Oh, I haven't had gout in a long time. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm eating other things more healthy. But frankly, I haven't had an attack probably in, I don't know, 6-7 years now. It's been a while.
Hey, Terry, I'd like to hear a little bit more of the circumstances or conditions surrounding the incident when you saved a friend of yours from drowning.
Well, it was a good friend of mine that we grew up together, and my neighbor across the street had a swimming pool, and him and I went over and swimming, and I don't know how it happened, but all of a sudden I heard this gurgling or bubbling in the water, and I called for my friend. He didn't answer. Somebody else outside the pool was taking the stuff out of their pockets real quick, was going to jump in, and by that time, I didn't even realize it. I had found them, and I had them over to the edge of the pool before they jumped in, and I kind of pushed him up out, and I grabbed a hold of him and pulled him out of the water, but he ended up being okay. It sure did scare the heck out of me, and I didn't even realize, you know, what I did until after I did it. It was crazy. I still wonder how I found them.
That's pretty amazing. If you don't mind, you were talking about when you were working, I think it was at the shop for the blind, you got married. At that time, was the lady that you married also working there?
No, actually, I met her through my mother. My mother was dating a gentleman. My mom and dad was divorced, and my mom was dating this guy, and he had a daughter, and that's kind of how I met her.
I had to come, I had to leave and go back in, but did you just tell us how you met Nancy? That's what I was going to ask you.
No, I met Nancy on CB radio, matter of fact. She only lived a couple blocks from where I lived, so that's how we got talking, and we met, and something just clicked, and here we are.
Hi, Terry. This is Sarah Smile. You said you took a life-saving class, if I heard you right. Did you learn CPR?
We did a little bit of it, not much. I couldn't remember it now if I wanted to. But yeah, there's actually, you're from Buffalo area. You've heard about Attica, New York. There was a gentleman that was a guard at Attica Prison. He would come over to the School for the Blind in Batavia and teach a life-saving class. And it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. Got a lot out of it.
Well, I don't mean to keep hogging the key, but I am pausing to give other people a chance. So anyway, when you were you had the job when you were refurbing the toner cartridges, you said you took them into the dirty room and y'all would blow them out. That had to be, oh gosh, just a terrible fog of dirt and dust in the air. Were you wearing some kind of a breathing protection apparatus? Gotta hope so.
Well, I tell you, I think if the proper people knew about it, I think they could have been shut down. But we didn't dare to report it, and they probably knew that because I think they would have closed it down because the mask that they had us wear was a little cardboard mask. It was had a machine that you put the cartridge in, and you reach your arms inside, and it would suck some of the toner away from you, but not anywhere near like it should. I'd come home, and Nancy would wash my clothes, and she'd wash them in cold water, and the toner would come to the top. There's so much toner. I look, when I come out of there, he kind of thought I was a coal miner. And finally, I got coveralls and wore those to work, and I'd take them off before I came home. So it did help a lot.
Well, Terry, since you haven't mentioned it, I will. But I, for one, appreciate the fact that you've helped me in the last, well, I started dealing with VIP a few years ago. And you've helped me both in computer repair and in buying a brand new computer that you built for me. And there's a lot of people, other people in this group, a lot that are not, that owe their ability to be online to your assistance and your patience. And I, for one, wouldn't tell you how much I really appreciate it.
Professor, tell us how you became so proficient in computer work and technology. Did you take special classes for that, or did you just pick it up, or how did that come about?
Yeah, by the way, thanks, Franklin. I appreciate that for the good thoughts. And Ralph, no, actually, what little bit I know, I've learned it through the years with just on these chat sites, learning from one another like a lot of us do still. Pick up odds and ends. I'm all self-taught. And if I don't know what I'm doing, I just try to make people think I do. You know, I fake it really well. I don't know. You try the simple things first, and if that doesn't work, then you dig into a little bit more. But my problem is I don't like to give up. If I start something, I can be on somebody's computer 2-3 hours, and usually they tire out before I do because I'm so determined. But I shouldn't go so long.
How did you get interested in computers in the first place?
I started out with a DOS computer and a shell account, and I used to get on BBSs and all that. Then later on, a friend of mine told me that, you know, Windows wouldn't be something I could learn. He said it's totally out of the question, it'd be too difficult. Another friend of mine, no longer with us now, he thought for sure that I could, so he did some research and figured out, yeah, you could do Windows. They have programs out there. He did some hunting and helped get me set up. And once we got set up, I just started from that point on. I started, you know, the more that came available, the more I dug into it. And, of course, then I got on For the People and met a lot of people. And was on a tech team over there and just picked up odds and ends from there and then came over here and did sort of the same thing. And, I don't know, it's just something I enjoyed. And I'm always afraid that, you know, if I didn't have computers to work on and do tech support, my mind would be gone because my memory has really degraded here in the last few years.
Are there other people who have questions?
Terry, the men that you go to breakfast with, how did you meet them?
Well, it started off when my brother, that used to go is passed now, but I only have one brother that's left still. So when I lived up in Beaver Dams, which was about 10 miles north of town, it was a little long ways for them to come pick me up to go to breakfast. But since Nancy and I moved into town, it's right on the way for them. So it's a group my brother knew, and he plays golf with them all the time. And one of the guys I've known since I was young anyway, he hung around with my brother and myself. But, so that's kind of how it all got started. And so there's four of us, and when my brother gets back from Florida, probably another month or so, then there'll be five of us that go to breakfast. So that's how that got going. And it's kind of nice to get together once a week and, you know, do the breakfast bit.
Okay, Terry, this is Coconut. I got to ask you a question, because I love hearing the answer. What was your guide dog's name again?
My dog's name was Laser, and he was a German Shepherd, and he was one smart dog. I really loved the name when I got it because his name was Laser, and I used to tell people I was laser guided. But he was such a good dog. I really miss him.
Well, I just wanted to go on record as saying thanks for all the help that you've given me with my computer problems. And it's not only been great that you were able to help me, but it's been a good learning experience, and I really enjoyed getting to know you. So looking forward to some more sessions where we can hang out and do stuff like that.
Well, thank you. And it's always a pleasure to help people. Sure do enjoy it. Keeps me out of trouble.
Now I have a question. Has this really been very painful?
Oh, you wouldn't believe how bad I'm hurting.
Well, can you remember when you had your first, that's not on this list. I'm sorry.
Do you?
Terry, I am so glad that we have been able to keep you out of trouble by all our questions and problems. And I feel quite sure that we'll continue to keep you out of trouble in that manner.
Well, between you all and my wife, I stay out of trouble. But, you know, I got to give everybody a hard time. Of course, it wouldn't be me if I didn't. And I tried to fight this off, but then, oh, well, what can I say? It wasn't so bad, though, really. Enjoy all the friends and stuff. And VIP has been good to me, and I've always enjoyed it ever since we got it started.
Professor, I just want to personally thank you for being the ultimate Elmer.
Thank you very much, Terry, for sharing your story. Very interesting.
Very interesting. I wish you all the best.
Yes. And I appreciate all the time you spent with me one day trying to get me on VIP. I just couldn't do it. I'm not very computer literate. And with your help, now getting on VIP is 1, 2, 3. Just a few taps, and I'm already in. Thank you so much. And thank you for being there. And thank you for sharing.
Yeah, well, you and your young lady, glad you came in this evening. And it's always been a pleasure. And, you know, I'm glad I was some help to you. So that's good. And hopefully you get another computer and get to, so things will even be easier for you. So
I'm trying to convince it, Terry. I'm trying to convince it.
Any other questions and remarks?
Parker, what happened to all the things you were going to ask?
Yeah, I've been waiting for the other shoe to drop, but it hasn't. And pretty soon you all can wake up from your nap.
I decided I would be nice to him, so I'm not going to ask anything.
I think that's a good idea, poor old guy. He's so befuddled.
Terry, I've got Bernie on the phone. She wants to say something.
Hi, Terry. As I call you, Mr. Fix-It. I don't thought I'd ever, well, I'd throw my TV, my computer away if you weren't around. I'm very, very stupid on a computer. But anyway, I can never thank you for all the help you give me. So I really appreciate it. And I just think you're great. I can't get through. So,
yeah, she's getting the feedback through her computer speakers. I think I caught most of it, but it's been a pleasure working with you, Bernie, and glad we could be of help with you. And you know, anytime you need help, you know where you can find it.
To my American father, Terry, thank you for all that you do, and just keep staying out of trouble.
I don't have any choice.
Well, I must admit that you're very, very good at multitasking. And we always, well, it's almost like a pool, us trying to guess what you're doing when you are multitasking and not asking it, and not answering us. But Terry, thank you very, very much for coming tonight and allowing me to interview you. And next month, it will be Parker Waddington. So we look forward to that. And again, thanks everyone for coming tonight. Thanks, Terry, and have a wonderful week.
This has been a presentation of VIP Conduit.